listening to Banal of America Audio.
Banal of America Audio.
Banal of America Audio.
Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
All right, and can you talk about this story of the psychics looking at the purported Chupacabra pictures or something like that? I only got a vague outline of this story before.
Well, this was an endeavor that a well-known U.S. parapsychologist, Peter Jordan, had taken upon himself to do. Mm-hmm. I provided him with photographs from the Puerto Rico mutilations, and I think maybe one or two from the Mexican sightings. And he had a number of psychometrists take a look at them, or rather take a look at, you know, have a feel of the photos.
Yeah.
And the results were very interesting. Not because they seemed to get us any closer to an answer, but the nature of the answers themselves. The late Ron Mangivite, I think his name was one of the psychometrists, and he said this creature takes an intense pleasure in confusing people. He could feel a tremendous malice, but a tremendous joy at knowing that people would be so mystified by what was going on. He also, I think, when given a map of Puerto Rico, he said, there's something involving a group of people dressed in white at this location, this particular location, which happened to be the borders of the El Yunque rainforest. I think it's called the Caribbean National Rainforest properly. Mm-hmm. And the suggestion was that a number of Santeria practitioners had perhaps held a ritual to conjure up this entity. And this entity had manifested itself and was living not of blood. Chupacabras does not eat blood. That's one of the things. Whatever it does with the blood, we don't know. It drains it. Perhaps that energy keeps it going. We can't say. But that was the one of the truly intriguing findings of that psychometry session. The fact that humans seemed to be involved in it, and that there was, for want of a better word, I'm going to call it sorcery involved.
Wow, that's bizarre. Yeah, that's very fascinating.
But that's only, I can say, from the results of those of that particular session.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, of course. And as far as, like, the physical evidence of the Chupacabra, now, I was reading one of your articles from a few years back here in Paranoia Magazine with a story about Chupacabra eggs, and also had a picture of some potential Chupacabra hair. So can you talk about the eggs and the hair evidence that seems to have come up regarding the Chupacabra?
Well, the Chupacabra's eggs, if memory serves, was an event that took place in Chile during the 2000 Chilean Chupacabras reports.
Mm-hmm.
People had said at the time, and the media, rather. See, this is. Let me just make this distinction, that people just think these are random folks coming forward. These are all journalistic reports. They're all backed up by their journalists who've been to the site.
Yeah.
And researchers on site who work with me on this subject. In the year 2000, people had reported that up in the northern Chilean desert, the towns of Maria Elena and other smaller villages. Now, these are a little bit of geographical background. Chile, aside from being the world's longest country with an uninterrupted coastline, is predominantly desert in its northern end.
Okay.
That's where all the copper mines that the Anaconda and the Kennecott Corporation used to own way back when.
Mm-hmm.
People felt that some of these abandoned mines were actually being used by Chupacabras for breeding. There were reports substantiated at the time, I'm not sure what to make of them, that stateside interest had gone down to Chile to take away a breeding pair of Chupacabras, male and female. I'd never heard of such a thing before.
Yet
you had people, air traffic controllers, swearing to have to this fact, and anecdotal, do with the information as what
yeah,
you
exactly.
make. But the eggs were apparently discovered in these abandoned mines in the Maria Elena region of Chile, of northern Chile.
Mm-hmm.
The Chupacabras hairs came from other events, if memory serves, that took place at that time. They were taken to the Catholic University in Santiago de Chile, and the same result is always inconclusive.
Yeah.
People, I guess, hope that in our age of, you know, profilers, DNA, great TV shows where the answer always happens within an hour.
Yeah.
Most of the results are inconclusive. It's either animal hair with strange characteristics. Sometimes they found incredibly high levels of magnesium. Some of the blood samples going back to the Puerto Rican events showed concentrations of chlorophyll and blood. So, I mean, you don't know what to make of them. And, of course, usually, I still get this question to this very day. Why can't, I guess, a conclusive study be performed? And you start running into a number of buzzsaws. You have some researchers have the evidence, don't want to share it. Some individuals have the evidence, they feel it's sacred, that it's been given to them as a divine trust, won't part with it. Then you have the financial aspect. A lot of people can't afford to pay for these tests. You can't go to a state police lab. They don't accept civilian samples. So you start with a number of blocks that when you do find a university willing to work with you, the best you can do is whatever limited test they can provide, and the answer is usually inconclusive. Here are the findings. We found these minerals, these trace elements, this, that, and the other, but no clearly remarkable or distinguishing features.
Yeah. And what about during this chupacabra flap that went on? Were there any decent pictures that were taken of the animal or beast or whatever you want to call it during this time?
No, none whatsoever. That's another thing, another bone of contention with people who venture to the subject. Mm-hmm. I think most folks feel that if there are so many pictures of UFOs, why aren't there as many pictures of chupacabras? And if there are no pictures, that means it must not exist. Hardly the case. Most people, even now in our age of, I guess, cell phone cameras and what have you, if you're faced with the unknown and possibly dangerous, few people have the presence of mind to whip out a camera.
Exactly, yeah.
So I know that I've been, full of cameras all my life, in my car, everywhere, and if I saw something strange, I don't know what I would do.
Exactly.
If I would be able to reach into the glove compartment. But we do have some photos from Brazil, from the 1998 sightings, that are blurry, as these pictures seem to be. But after computer enhancement, you do get to see a clearly defined strange creature that looks slightly like the drawing that appears in Chupacabra's Diary and other mysteries, slightly like something else. There are other features, fangs, in some of these photos that were not reported elsewhere.
Yeah.
So we don't know what to make of them, but those are the only photos, to my knowledge, that are around are the ones from Brazil.
Okay. All right. Now, what would you say I have sort of a list here, but what would you say the various schools of thought are regarding what the chupacabra is? It seems like there's a spectrum here that goes from natural animal to extraterrestrial experiment cargo of some sort, and then over to human experiment gone awry. Would you say that's pretty much the various schools of thought when it comes to what the chupacabra is and also the interdimensional aspect that we talked about?
Well, I think that pretty much describes the branches of thought. I guess you could also say that it's an unclassified natural creature we know nothing about. I mean, certainly, that's always an option.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess a lot of people tried to associate chupacabras with UFOs simply because it seemed to be appearing in a time that had been known as one of the most active UFO periods in recent history. So many people felt that it was tied to UFOs, that it had been dropped off by aliens, that it had escaped from aliens.
Yeah.
The description, at least in its head and its wraparound eyes, it looked alien, so it had to be from another planet. Others felt that we were just dealing with some kind of strange experiment gone wrong. And remember, a lot of this had to do with that, and I in every single interview I do, I bring it up, that famous photo of the mouse with the ear growing out of its back. That was, I think, an MIT experiment of some sort. People felt, look, if we had not known, if we hadn't been told that this technology was so advanced. And this is what is publicly acknowledged. You can imagine what's going on behind the scenes. We're not even being told about
it. Yeah.
So, you know, tie it into Roswell fever and UFOs, and they figured, well, it's half kangaroo, half alien head. You start thinking the government is doing experiments based on what it's gleaned from Roswell and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was one option. Now you have the other possibility that I was mentioning slightly earlier in our interview, which is the fact that it could be an insect of some sort that's been with us forever. A Brazilian cryptozoologist by the name of Fernando Grossman suggests that there could be entire subterranean colonies of chupacabras-like creatures that behave much like ants and have come to the surface as a result of deep earth activity, whether it's heavy mining for minerals in Brazil or our own deep sea oil activity. Something has brought them to the surface. And this cryptozoologist says, look at how chupacabras kills. It does not pounce on its prey. It lathers them up. In some cases, you see some kind of proboscis emerging from its mouth that it punctures creatures with. It leaves its telltale puncture mark. A lot of that, it seems that stinger is capable of delivering some sort of enzyme to the victim that liquefies the organs and makes them much more readily absorbable. That was always one of the key aspects in Chupacabra's reports, that the farmer would find not only that his animal's blood was gone, but that organs seemed to have melted away. He was finding hollow cavities inside the animals. So that goes to reinforce that possibility that we're dealing with some kind of insect we know nothing about.
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico, a lot of people kept saying that whenever, even if they hadn't seen chupacabras, they would know it was around because of a strong chemical smell.
Yeah.
A smell that one witness likened to the chemical malathion that we use, the insecticide malathion.
Okay.
He says that's what it smelled like to her.
Hmm.
So, yes, we keep on going back to this formic acid, some kind of, I don't want to coin a new term here, but like a super insect.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I've never really heard that part of the discussion before, but it makes a lot of sense. And now, what about the general sort of paranoia aspect of that the U.S., I guess you kind of touched on this already, actually, the U.S. government and NASA's role in this chupacabra mystery? It sounds like that NASA may have been vaguely involved in this somehow.
Well, see, that's one of the things that goes around that I always have to caution and say, don't forget any agency, U.S. agency, that wants to operate with a free hand in Latin America just has to say it's from NASA.
Oh, really?
Because the space program was held, as I said earlier, in such high regard in Latin America.
Yeah.
That anything having to do with space, that's okay. You're from NASA, you step right in.
Wow.
So it's possible that whatever agency was being seen down there, showing credentials that suggested being from NASA. Remember, a lot of people from NASA do bona fide go down to Chile to test, I guess, a lot of the remote probes that we're going to be going to use in Mars, such as the Opportunity rover.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that have been tested in Chile in the desert.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yes, there's that cover that has been used to death in Mexico and Puerto Rico. Just have people go down, military personnel dressed in white, put them in lab coats, say they're from NASA, no problem.
Huh.
No complaints.
Wow. See, that's something I never really known about. I didn't realize that the NASA was held in such high regard down there. Go ahead.
No. I think it goes right back, as I said, to the Apollo program. People saw it as such a great opportunity for all of mankind. Now that there have been political changes in Latin America, I mean, you can read about them in the paper every day.
Yeah.
Maybe that kind of welcome mat has sort of been pulled in a little bit. So if it's tried again, I'd like to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, NASA's kind of stagnant now as it is, so I'm not surprised. And in general, outside of the chupacabra, talk a little bit about the U.S. government's shady dealings going on down in Puerto Rico. Like you said, there's rumors of whether it's a UFO underground base or a U.S. underground base. There's rumors of bases and rumors of U.S. activity and UFO activity going on in Puerto Rico. I'm sure you're really familiar with these sort of urban legends and stories. Can you extrapolate on that a little bit?
Well, we can begin by saying that there is no doubt that no other piece of land under the U.S. flag has been as intensely used by the military as Puerto Rico has been since 1898. At one point, you had about 20 military bases from all branches of the service.
Wow.
Until Roosevelt Roads shut down a couple of years ago. That happened to be one of the major bases. And El Yunque Rainforest was being employed back in the Vietnam days to test Agent Orange. They tested radioactive agents. A number of things were done back then that still, you know, the Puerto Rican people have very, very long memories, so a lot of even more incidents could be brought forward. But I think a lot of the UFO-related stuff had to do with activity that took place between 1988 and, I'm going to say, 1994 as a cutoff date. A lot of the reports in Laguna Cartagena and southwestern Puerto Rico, the triangular UFOs were being seen in different parts of the island. The presence of clearly military personnel reporting to places where UFO landings had occurred. Interference with witnesses by clearly official personnel in the U.S. government. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more that I'm not even aware of that's gone on.
Yeah. Well, we talked about kind of how the Chupacabra sightings have sort of died down. Is there anything really breaking lately in the last couple of years on the Chupacabra, or has it really fizzled out since the 90s wave?
In Puerto Rico, it's largely fizzled out. Maybe once or twice a year you'll get reports of mutilation. But it's hard to tell exactly what's going on down there. The creature, the last confirmed sighting of the creature was as far back as 1997, when it mutilated some horses in central Puerto Rico. I think it's never been seen since. What has happened is, I think, in more recently, let's say 2003, 2004, there were a lot of chupacabras and winged entity sightings in northern Argentina and in Chile, in the Andean region.
Okay.
Did that tie in to the huge cattle mutilations that Argentina experienced in the year 2002? I don't know. No one ever reported seeing the chupacabras as part of those mutilations. In fact, the Argentinian wave resembled our U.S. cattle mutilations from the 70s. The animals were being found, official government denials, red lights seen in the skies, UFO activity, but no creatures, certainly no chupacabras manifestations.
Okay. All right, and sort of moving on to ufology and the UFO phenomenon, obviously you've done a lot of study and work in the Latin UFO scene, and since you live in America, you obviously know about the American UFO scene. How would you compare the Latin ufology scene to its American counterpart?
You know, I think about 10 years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, you could make a very pronounced distinctions between the two.
Mm-hmm.
The Latin American UFO scene throughout the 70s still had great traces of, shall we call it, a metaphysical bent to it. There was a lot of contacteeism. There still is to this day. And a lot of people in Latin America, to my mind, came to ufology and the study of the paranormal through spiritism. Spiritism is a huge devotion of its own in many of these countries. A lot of people, the intelligentsia, have all read the classics, Allan Kardec, all those great 19th century authors. And to do that metaphysical step into ufology is quite logical. But a lot of the writers and a lot of the thinkers brought this metaphysical bent to their understanding of cases and the reports.
Yeah.
Then you had a more, I'm guessing, nuts and bolts crowd took over from them. And right now you have a I would like to say, much more of a nuts and bolts contactee amalgam going on there. But there has been a strong current of denying the UFO phenomenon among researchers. It's become almost a sport to say, well, all of these cases were hoaxes. None of this is real. How could it possibly be real? This must all be some kind of delirium. And I think it's much more pronounced as we speak in Spain than in South America or in Mexico. We have a total, complete, absolute rejection of what went before. We're all skeptical. We're all convinced that these were hoaxes, that these were scams, that this was all misinformation, it was all witness error. So it's been quite an about-face that we haven't seen stateside yet.
Oh, I hope it doesn't. Well, yeah. What do you think is the cause for that about face all of a sudden, where it's gone from, you know, pretty open to researching and now skeptical?
I think that in recent years, perhaps people find that there's more, as you know, remember, I guess ufology and the paranormal, study of the paranormal is a very, very human thing.
Yeah.
We don't have the actual items to investigate. We can only investigate cases. We can investigate people.
Mm-hmm.
As people get older, they start thinking that this belief in strange things, in Martians, in UFOs, what have you, was something of their younger days, and now they want some kind of dignity. So they start wrapping themselves up in, you know, science and knowledge, and this can't possibly have been. These were all frauds. This was all hoaxing. And what they're doing right now is systematically knocking down the very cases that they once upheld.
Wow.
Hopefully we won't all be in that position as we grow older, but
yeah.
I think a lot of people are doing it right now over there.
Yeah. Now, is there a younger generation that's coming along to pick up where these people left off, or is it sort of fizzling out now?
I think personally, it's a purely personal opinion, that
yeah.
It has fizzled out because of the internet. The days when you could be, let's say, an excitable teenage boy or girl and get into UFOs and want to read the books and visit the sites and borrow money to get on the bus and go see these things, it's over. Now you get on the internet, you go to a couple of, you know, web lists, you go to a couple of chat groups, you exchange angry words with people, and then you forget about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, that there won't be a next generation, or it'll be a very small generation of, number one, of researchers, and number two, of people actually interested in the subject.
Wow, that's disappointing.
It's a rather pessimistic appraisal, I realize, but that's what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as like the mainstream reaction, the mainstream media, and what the everyday layperson believes and thinks in the Latin countries, what would you say their attitude is toward the paranormal?
Well, it's interesting. I think that a lot of people early on, for example, when I was living in Mexico in the 70s, there was great open-mindedness. People felt, yes, this is all happening. These are all from space. These are all other planets coming to get in touch with us, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
As years went on, you notice people thinking, no, these are events created by the government to distract us from our problems. And that seems to have been, bar none, the prevailing attitude in Mexico. When I visited to look into the Chupacabras cases of 1997, throughout, they figured, no, nothing's happening. This is all the government trying to distract us from the economic crisis. Likewise, in Chile, many people felt, look, these mutilations, there's something else going on, but there's nothing extraterrestrial about them. It's really hard to say that there's a blanket sentiment in over a dozen countries, but I think that the average person now looks at the paranormal, the slightly jaundiced eye.
Okay, all right. And then as far as Mexico and the Mexican UFO culture, a lot of people say that that most of the amazing and important stuff is going down right now in Mexico, where especially like after we had that amazing jet fighter, jet jet footage of UFOs that came out a couple of years ago.
Oh, the FLIR images, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and lots of sightings over Mexico City and some of the Armada-type sightings that we've heard of, and even this humanoid-type sighting. Why do you think so much is going on down in Mexico, and tell us a little bit about, like, what is going on down there, because it sounds like it's really a hotbed of activity in the last few years.
You know, I think the answer there is I can never think back to a time when there wasn't heavy UFO or paranormal activity going on in Mexico. The country just seems to cry out for it. It's a huge, mysterious country. I mean, many people who've traveled around the world go to Mexico and they feel, you know, we've never felt lonelier or longed more to be home than after being in the Sierra Madre, after being in the Mexican desert. It's so alien that it just seems to be a magnet to all these things.
Yeah.
Coupled with that, you have some excellent, truly top-notch researchers who've been active for a number of years. Ana Luisa Siv, you have Luis Jaspersen, you have a number of other people I could mention who've done sterling work in the past number of years, especially now with the visual stuff, all the fact that people have always had an interest in photography and now in videography, and they're taking movies of anything that moves, passing them on to the right people. You have TV shows that are still interested in presenting an unbiased, non-sensational approach to these things. So as long as that happens, there's going to be a lot of information coming forth.
Okay. All right. And that kind of segues really well into this website that you had been working on for a while. We can talk about how the evolution of it and everything is. Inexplicata.us, inexplicata.us, that is Inexplicata, the Journal of Hispanic Ufology, and that is a lot of information that you've taken that was in Spanish and translated into English for the English-speaking audience. Talk a little bit about Inexplicata, what it is, how it came about, and it doesn't seem like you're producing any more issues, so you know what's going on with it.
Well, back in 1998, my Mexican colleague, Dr. Rafael Lara, and I decided that it was about time that we had some kind of, like a formal organ or agency through which we could put forth all the information we both had in our files mm-hmm. for so many years. Being that just magazines weren't enough, we needed something much more dynamic. So since 1992, I had had a small newsletter, which then evolved into an Explicata with a clearly defined view, which was to provide feature-length articles by the leading researchers in the Spanish-speaking UFO community available to an English-reading audience.
Yeah.
So our charter members, Manuel Carvajal in Spain, you have Encarnacion Zapata in Brazil, a number of people, all provided us with their leading-edge research and cases at the time. And we produced, it was going to be a twice-yearly publication, which it was for a number of years. And then as time went on, we noticed that just wasn't the interest in having this information out there. But there was interest in having up-to-the-minute cases. So it was my opinion at the time that while Inexplicata still exists, as a journal, it certainly does, we don't do the features anymore. We try to do the immediate, everyday cases, circulate them to a number of websites, post them to our own blog,
yeah,
and just keep it from there, just keep that immediacy, which I think that our original approach was better for, let's say, the ufology that we had grown up with,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you have like a saga UFO magazine appearing once or twice a month, you know, once every 2 months.
Yeah.
But now people wanted to hear, with the internet, I guess everything becomes faster.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted to know what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
We don't want to hear about yesterday's case 2 months from now. So this more dynamic approach has served us very well and has let us also transmit things we couldn't do before, like photographs, podcasts, things to that effect.
Awesome, awesome. And that's at inexplicata.blogspot.com?
That's correct.
Okay, awesome. And you can still find the back issues of Inexplicata, the Journal of Hispanic Ufology. Those are still available at inexplicata.us. It's definitely
correct,
worthwhile
yeah.
reading, so check it out. Tell us about your books, Chupacabra and Other Mysteries, and Flashpoint, High Strangeness in Puerto Rico. Where can people get them? You know, give us a little thumbnail on what they're about.
Well, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries tells you the story of the Chupacabras wave from 1995 through 1997, perhaps early 98. No, 99, the spring of 97, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And it also delves into other aspects of the paranormal and cases of, let's say, of Latin American and Spanish ufologica and paranormal events.
Yeah.
Flashpoint, High Strangeness in Puerto Rico, is more of a little history book. It tells you the story of UFOs in Puerto Rico from the time of the Taino Indians, which is the 1500s, to the early 90s, right before the Chupacabras appeared. Chupacabras and the Mysteries is available from Amazon.com, and I believe Flashpoint can be found at Amazon.co.uk. It was published in England. I believe it's still available there.
Oh, okay, awesome, awesome. And is, you can get it through that, and it'll, they'll send it to America?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, cool. All right, well, what's next on your plate? What do you have coming up? You know, what can we look forward to from you in the future?
Actually, I'm slowing down. I don't have any major works in mind. I just continue to do our daily updates to the UFO community regarding the cases that are occurring. What I have broken into have been, you know, taking all the photos, the incredible archive of photos that we have, and creating little video reports so people can see these photos on the Internet. One or two of them are on YouTube currently. And that's something I find very rewarding, just being able to show. The old show, don't tell.
Yeah.
To actually to show and put musical backgrounds and let people actually see with their own eyes.
Awesome.
This information that we receive on a regular basis.
Awesome, awesome. And they can find that kind of stuff at inexplicada.blogspot.com?
That's correct.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Scott, thank you very much for being on the show. You had a wealth of information for us on a subject that really doesn't get as much play as you'd expect. The books are Chupacabras and Other Mysteries and Flashpoint, High Strangeness in Puerto Rico. The website is inexplicata.blogspot.com. You can find the link at banalofamerica.com where you found the interview. Scott, thank you very much for being on the show.
Hey, Tim, thank you so much for having me.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio. Big thanks to Scott Corrales for coming on the show. Just a fascinating conversation. You can find out more information about Scott at his website, www.inexplicata.blogspot.com. inexplicata.blogspot.com. Check it out. I also want to thank Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, and Joe V. of banalofamerica.com for your help and support with the audio series and the website. Much of what you see and hear from banalofamerica.com is a product of the hard work of these fine folks. Check out their columns at banalofamerica.com. They are putting out top-notch material week in and week out. Leslie writes Grey Matters, Chiron has The K-Files, R. Lee pens Trickster's Realm, and Joe V is the man behind the infamous Wrath of Joe. They cover esoterica from A to Z, top to bottom, and all points in between. BanalofAmerica.com, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. If you're a longtime Banal of America audio listener or an appreciative newcomer, and you want to help support the audio series, click the PayPal button at BanalofAmerica.com, make a donation. A radio show like this costs money. I pay that money with the help of Banal of America audio listeners like you. So if you can, click the PayPal button at banalofamerica.com, make a donation. It would be hugely appreciated. Additionally, we are hoping to add a new feature here to the end of the program starting next week. It's called Listener Feedback. You send us an email, I read it on the show, I respond to it, simple as that. You have an opinion on a previous guest, what they said, maybe you take umbrage with it, maybe you agree with it. You have an idea for a future guest, or you just have an overall comment on the show in general, you can send your feedback to boaaudio@hotmail.com, or just click one of the many links at banalofamerica.com for contacting me, and it will put you on the path to having your email featured on Banal of America Audio's Listener Feedback segment at the end of next week's program. Next week on Banal of America Audio, Paula Harris, geo-ufologist extraordinaire. Originally, this was going to be a two-part episode, but I will be in Las Vegas 2 weeks from today for the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4. So instead of splitting up the interview and having that one-week hiatus in between, we decided just to roll out an extra-large, over two-hour edition of Banal of America Audio to make up for that missing week in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about Paula's early influences, some of the people that shaped her early path in the ufology world, ufology in general, exopolitics, and some of the key differences and similarities between American ufology and the Italian/European ufology scene, plus tons and tons more. You'll hear an audio preview of that in just a few moments. Paula Harris, next week on Banal of America Audio. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for listening. This is Tim Banal, signing off.